Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. Higher education in this country is facing numerous challenges. There are cost issues for colleges and students. Campus security for co-eds is an ongoing concern. There is increasing competition for four-year institutions from community colleges and online education. I'm Don Marsh. These are just some of the things we'll be talking about today with Tim Wolfe, the president of the University of Missouri System. He is a graduate of the University of Missouri. He's been on the job in Columbia almost exactly 3 years and is currently on a state tour touting the value of higher education. With me for our conversation is Dale Singer, education reporter for St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome to both of you. Tim, it's nice to see you again. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Don. Great to see you and Dale.
You know, this is a time of year when everybody's looking at the state of the state, the state of the union. I wonder if you can give us a kind of a thumbnail description of the state of the University of Missouri system.
A thumbnail description is that we're doing quite well, and quite well by the quantity of students that we have are at all-time highs, 77,000 students. The quality of the students, as measured by their ACT score, now averages 26, which is also an all-time high. So student population couldn't be more excited about what's going on our campus. Continues to be significant in terms of the teaching mission, research mission, and economic development mission. So I'm very, very encouraged about where we are.
How about the funding situation? Are you in solid ground?
Solid. Depends upon your definition of solid. Let me tell you where we are from a funding standpoint. The financial condition of the University of Missouri system is decent. Decent relative to our balancing the revenue and the expenses with the challenges that we have of keeping tuition low. The state of Missouri public institutions are number one by a fairly significant spread in terms of the lowest average tuition increase over the last 5 years. That's because of Senate Bill 389. So we have been keeping tuition affordable. Our funding challenges from the state are still there, and we're working with the General Assembly and the governor on trying to increase the funding year over year, as well as funding on specific projects, be it maintenance and repair or our build out of our medical school to provide medical residents for Southwest Missouri and the Cox Mercy Partnership. So we've got our challenges. Over time, we've stepped up to those challenges. Where we are right now is a unique situation that the partnership that we've got with the state in terms of funding is necessary for us to invest in our future. And with our maintenance and repair delinquencies of over $1 billion, there's some bonding out there for maintenance and repair on each of our campuses as well as the other campuses across the great state of Missouri that we're in desperate need of. And so that's something that we've been talking about. We're working with leadership on both sides to try to emphasize the importance of higher education and make sure that we're accountable and transparent in terms of a dollar invested by the state in the University of Missouri system has a very, very visible return for all citizens.
Is it a tough sell dealing with the state and getting the things that you need?
Well, I think it's getting better. The challenge that we've got in the state of Missouri is there's a lot of people with their hands stretched out looking for money, and we're resource constrained as a state. And that resource constrained situation comes from we're not seeing the growth in tax collections that other states have seen, and that growth is because the income tax, which is the biggest sliver of our pie, is not growing, and that is a product of not seeing the increase in jobs post-recession that some other states are seeing. And sales tax, we're just not only do we have a lot of people employed with a lot of money, but they're not spending as much as they want, that we would like them to. So when you've got a pie that's not expanding to cover just normal costs of Medicaid and K through 12 and higher ed and prisons and all that stuff, then it puts pressure on the services that the state can deliver and the funding that they can deliver to institutions like the University of Missouri system.
I know for a long time that people would talk about the University of Missouri as a state-supported institution, but it's really more now state-assisted, isn't it?
You could say that. Just if you make that statement based on the percentage of our funding that comes from the state, that's very, very true, where in the past the majority of the funding for the educational mission came from the state. Now the majority comes from tuition dollars. And so you're, that could be the statement that it's assisted versus funded.
If that keeps going up in terms of the percentage coming from students, is it, are families going to be priced out of the market?
Well, we're very sensitive to making sure that we're affordable. And so we look at what the alternatives are in the marketplace for other four-year institutions. We're a bit different in our four campuses than some other publics that are out there. The price sensitivity or the price elasticity curve, if I can go back to my MU business school days, mm-hmm. the price elasticity curve isn't as steep for us as it is for some other institutions when you look at our peer group in comparison. So we don't like to pull that financial lever of raising tuition. It's the last thing that we look at from a budgeting standpoint because we want to make sure that we are affordable. But there is some headroom relative to our peers if in fact, we needed to increase tuition. We'd like not to, but the facts are the facts that if you can't get more efficient and you can't see additional funding from the state or you can't get enough donations from your alumni and your supporters, then the over 60% of our revenue is tuition-based, so you'd have to pull that tuition lever. So we look at that on a regular basis. We have been balancing our budget across our four campuses, no different than the state has. We'll continue to do that. And we also know that we're on a never-ending journey of trying to be more efficient while maintaining quality. So we're always looking for ways of automating and eliminating processes that aren't highly valued or eliminating programs that aren't valuable. And I think we have proven over a period of time, and I'll give credit where credit's due, to my predecessor, President Forsey, that put in some accountability and transparency measures that weren't there previously, that it's pretty clear to political leadership that are looking at what to fund and what the return on that investment is. It's pretty clear that a dollar invested in the University of Missouri system and its four campuses provides a very clear return and a positive return.
You know, you indicated earlier that enrollment is high, and you're very gratified by that. It catches some people, I'm sure, by surprise, given the enormous amount of debt that young people have to go into these days in order to attend colleges. How is this playing, do you think, with your future? Do you anticipate that there will be fewer people attending a four-year institution because of the amount of debt that is incurred?
Well, here's my look at the marketplace now and my projections to the future is we are growing a population in a flat to declining market. In other words, the number of students that are going on to college is less now than it was previously. And when you break that down to the state of Missouri, we have less high school graduates now than we used to, and that trend's going to persist for a few more years. So we have less high school students to attract to 4 years, and then on a nationwide basis, you're seeing a decline in people choosing to go on to a college, and that's public, private, two-year, four-year. So we've got that demographic that's out there, but in this declining market, we're taking additional market share with the increase in students. What I believe going forward is, there is going to be the continued focus on, is college a reasonable investment or not? And the way that I respond to that question to students and parents that are asking that is if your student or son or daughter invests a dollar in themselves in higher education, it provides a 15% return over their life expectancy. If they take that same dollar and choose after high school to put it into the stock market, it's about a 7% return. Gold is about 2% return. Real estate's less than 1%. These are statistics from the Brookings Institute. Breaking it down a little bit further is if you are a college graduate, you will make $1.2 million more over your life expectancy than a high school graduate, which translates into $540 more per week. So if you have an earnings opportunity for $1.2 million and you're looking at the debt that you can incur over going to 4 years, and that average debt is around, on a nationwide basis, about $25,000. $25,000 debt to get a return of $1.2 million, I still like that return on investment ratio. That being said, is we need to make sure that we have attractive scholarship opportunities and loan opportunities for students. So I believe that on a global basis, the competitiveness of the United States and the competitiveness of a student trying to find out what they're passionate about and where they could find a fulfilling career. I believe college will continue to be a clear path towards that objective. The one thing, let me finish this off with one comment. When I was approached to be the president of the University of Missouri system, I called a friend of mine, John Cotter, who's a Harvard professor that's been well published, one of the leading experts in leadership. I called him because I'd been doing a lot of work with him over the years, and he happened to be one of my professors. And I said to John, I got this crazy opportunity. Should I take it? And he said, yes, you should take it. But let me give you one of the challenges. Higher education is the only industry in the United States, the only industry that has had global supremacy since its inception. There has been no other country that has competed with higher education in terms of quality, brand, any metric you look at, higher education in the United States has been number one. And all other industries have gone back and forth from a U.S. standpoint. So he says, you've got that track record of leadership on a global basis. But he said, secondly, if higher education doesn't change with the times, they too will follow the way of the steel industry and some of the other industries that have been challenged from a U.S. standpoint. So change is inevitable. Change needs to be embraced, and we need to be able to focus on that student demographic that we're going to serve and serve them in a unique way, because that demographic continues to shift and traditional models of education might not always work on a go-forward basis. So I like where we're positioned. We have students on a daily basis and parents, by investing their time and their dollars, they are saying what you're doing is the right thing. And we're seeing high placement rates in their areas of passion or the areas that we educated. So I believe this model is going to be perpetuated. I think that the future is bright. I don't look at this as a dying industry or declining industry. I think some of these conversations about alternatives, be it online and other alternatives, sure, they'll be out there. But I still think that the four-year college experience that we offer to many students is going to be in high demand.
So where are the biggest changes going to be, and what do you think is going to happen as far as the University of Missouri?
Well, the changes that are taking place at the University of Missouri is making sure that you have clarity and focus on a student-by-student experience. And to do that, you can use a lot of data analytics that are out there right now in terms of, as a student is thinking about coming to one of your four campuses, making sure that you provide them the right information to make an educated decision and come to your campus. And part of that educated decision is informing them on what your educational opportunities are, your research opportunities, informing them on what your scholarship opportunities are. But when you have convinced them to attend one of your four campuses, there's information that's available to you about that student relative to this. Courses they've taken, their class ranking, ACT, the environment that they came out of, that information is critical, because if you take a look at that into that student and you understand what he or she is strong or weak in, then you can proactively reach out to them in terms of advising, in terms of talking about what classes they should take and the sequencing of it, how they can participate in social activities on the campus, with the intent to try to graduate in a four-year or less period of time 100% of students and retain them from the time that they're on campus till when they leave the campus, and make sure that they're either placed in the career opportunity that they have chosen or that they've been educated to do, or prepare them to go on to professional programs. So what's changing is the customization of that experience on a one-to-one basis. From a student standpoint. So that's something that shifts. Also, what's also shifting in higher education, and we're experiencing this a lot at the University of Missouri, is if you don't have connection to industry relative to what you are teaching your students, and is there internships for those students in business or in industry, so that the industry can determine whether or not this is a long-term employee. If you don't have that tight connection and relationship, then you're producing a product which is a student industry or businesses are not going to be hiring. So you have to have that relationship, tighter relationship with industry. The other thing that's changing is industry has to appreciate they're part of the solution relative to investing in higher education. The funding model that used to take place, that it was the state's responsibility, primary responsibility to fund higher education, that train left the station. And so if the train has left the station, then the funding has shifted to the shoulders of students and parents more so than it was from the state. And also businesses have to participate in that. And what we have seen time and time again is once industry and businesses particularly understand how that dynamic has shifted, they have a dependency, a high dependency on making sure that their employees of the future are available and come to that particular organization with the right skills. So the dynamic between business, the higher education, and the state, making sure that that three-way partnership is working seamlessly is a big, big shift. And I'm happy to say that we've recognized it and we're working down that direction.
It's an investment for industry and businesses, obviously. We have to take a break. We'll do that now. We're talking with Tim Wolf, who is the president of the University of Missouri System. We'll continue the conversation. Dale Singer and I will do so in just a moment. If you'd like to get into the discussion, we would welcome you at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you would prefer to send us a tweet, we'll take that as well, of course, at STL On Air. Back with Tim Wolf in just a moment. This is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation with Tim Wolf, the president of the University of Missouri System, in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Missouri Governor Jay Nixon will discuss a trade mission to Cuba this afternoon and outline the economic benefits of increasing trade with that country. A citizens group is holding a meeting tonight to hear from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers about its progress cleaning radioactive materials in North St. Louis County around Coldwater Creek. The citizens group is concerned about high rates of rare cancers in neighborhoods around that creek. They also want faster progress because so far the Corps has only cleaned industrial and not residential areas. And representatives from the Missouri History Museum spent time today combing through some of the debris left over from burned-out businesses in Delwood. They want to keep a record of the protests in North County, and they're hoping to use some of the material in a new exhibit about the unrest in Ferguson. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Tim Wolf. Tim, just to follow up on something you said before the break with regard to the future. Do you in any sense feel threatened by what the president is talking about with regard to community colleges or with what people are talking about and thinking about with regard to online education, which would be a cost saver for a lot of people thinking about higher education?
Well, I don't feel threatened. I want to compliment the president for emphasizing the importance of higher education. That's something I absolutely stand behind and support. The approach that he's taking relative to community colleges, everybody gets a free community college experience, fits a lot of people. Many cases, people are going to community college already for free with the federal scholarships that's available and the state scholarship that's available here in the state of Missouri. Some of the students, though, prefer to go to a four-year experience. So my point is, why, if you're going to have a financial incentive to go to a college, put it in the hands of that student or the family of the students and let them make an informed decision as to whether a two-year experience or a four-year experience is best. One of the challenges that we have in 4 years is that we're remediating students to prepare them for a successful college experience, and that means we are investing a lot of dollars trying to get them to the fundamental foundational level of math skills that should have been picked up in the high school years or reading and writing. And so that remediation expense that we have to prepare them for college is a concern. Now, from a community college, over half their budget or half their hours, as I understand reading national periodicals, is spent on remediation. So if you're putting more money into an institution or a higher ed alternative that is remediating, couldn't you spend that money in fixing the problem, which is how do you invest in high schools in a way that you can solve that problem where it should be solved at high school versus being solved on a 2 or 4 year campus? So those are some of the questions that I would be asking if this picks up steam and looks like it's going to be something that's available. That being said, we have great relationships with community colleges, and if more people go to community colleges, especially here in St. Louis, with 3/4 of our students that come into our UMSL campus come from 2-year schools, so we have transfer agreements with the community colleges here in St. Louis, so we enjoy a great relationship, and if we have more people going to community colleges that have aspirations to get a 4-year degree, then it would help us as well. So that's kind of my response to that. Your second part of the question was fear or threats from online campuses or the for-profit model that for Phoenix and some of these other companies that are out there that are offering the online. I believe online has a lot of merit, and we've invested in it for quite some time. We have over, I think, 1,600 classes, 100 degree programs online across our 4 campuses. The beauty of online is a student gets to learn at his or her own speed at the location of choice. So it doesn't have to be in a classroom. They can be in their residence hall or fraternity, sorority, whatever. And they can't fall behind because if you design it correctly, they can't proceed through the class without demonstrating that they've absorbed or have the skills necessary to move on. Whereas in a traditional classroom setting, you can be in that class and not be paying attention. And the professor doesn't know any different. So you have that one-to-one relationship from an online standpoint. That being said, is online classes aren't perfect and aren't the solution for all types of education because a lot of the college experience that we have is around collaborative teamwork or project-based learning, and online doesn't facilitate itself well for that, or the laboratory experience, the hands-on laboratory experience for STEM-related career paths just doesn't work very well right now in online, though we're experiencing that. One of the things that employers say the most critical need is you need to produce more students that have critical learning skills or critical problem-solving skills, better said. So that critical problem-solving skills comes from having a conversation with faculty and your colleagues in the classroom and thinking through all the sides of a particular problem, coming up with a solution. And again, those skills are difficult to teach in an online program. So we've adopted online and technology as a way to enhance and fulfill our mission, but it's not a solve-all or the end result. Our end result is not to be an online college. Our end result is to use online and technology as a way to facilitate educating students and having wonderful graduates.
You've talked several times about the needs that corporations have and how you have to work with corporations. Talk a little bit about how the corporations in St. Louis have worked with UMSL to help the areas in Ferguson and other North County places.
Well, Dale, thank you for the question. I couldn't be more proud of the collaboration that we've got between leaders of industry and businesses and Tom George, the chancellor, and his leadership team for UMSL. When you look at post-Ferguson, the unfortunate situation, what has happened is Emerson clearly came to the table with scholarship opportunity and additional scholarship opportunity. We've had scholarship arrangements and collaborations with Emerson prior to the Ferguson unfortunate incident, but they came to the table. We came to the table with additional money from UMSL as well as the University of Missouri system for additional scholarships specifically for North County. Also, other institutions like Centene and the call center that they're looking at doing. We have great relationships with Express Scripts, who happen to be on our campus. And those relationships pay off dividends for the community 10 times over. Anheuser-Busch has contributed dollars towards our new business school, and the list goes on and on and on. So the major St. Louis employers, in the statistics are self-evident that UMSL is providing more talent for St. Louis headquartered institutions than any other institution of higher education in the St. Louis area. So we're very proud of that, and that's part of our mission as being a community-based higher education organization. UMSL's fulfilling that by collaborating with industry.
What should the role of these institutions, the institutions of higher learning, be in the communities they serve?
Well, that's a good question. And our mission statement, because we're the public land-grant research institution of the state of Missouri, our mission statement is about touching all 6 million Missourians. So we have to have a role in the community. We employ a lot of people. We pay taxes. We're voters in the community. We also have an extension responsibility of over 1,200 people that are in all 114 counties. And their services that they deliver to citizens in that community need to be defined as to what are priorities and what are the needs, and work with that local county extension office in providing those services. So we're in the community on a daily basis. And just some statistics in terms of what our reach is. Annually, we touch 2 million we have 2 million contacts on an annual basis through extension, and obviously we get 6 million residents in the state of Missouri. So 2 million of the 6 million, we have 2 million contacts. Also, the amount of investment that we have in the community based on the employees that we hire and the services and scholarship that we offer and the examples of how we put our students in the schools, the potential teachers, they are doing their internships in the schools, no different than our doctors, nurses, and dentists are doing internships in the community. We have a lot of uncompensated care for citizens, be it dental, optometry, or the medical school. We do $50 million in our hospital of uncompensated care. So we are significant players in the communities, and we will continue to do that, and that's part of our mission.
You may be stymied somewhat, however, with regard to training more healthcare workers in the state. You mentioned that earlier in our discussion, that no money is being provided to help you and some healthcare services and another institution to do this. Is that ever going to happen, do you think?
Well, we had funding for caring for Missourians Phase 1, where most of the public 4 year, 2 years participated in it, and we produced over 300 healthcare professionals. We had, based on the additional funding, we were supposed to provide 200, and we exceeded that. So we provided more nurses, doctors, dentists, optometrists to the communities based on that funding from the state. We also are expanding our medical school by 8 students, and thus the expansion of the medical school was intended and was specifically funded by the state to do their residency down in Southwest Missouri. Southwest Missouri, which has seen explosive population growth, are desperately trying to find more doctors, and there isn't a medical school down there. So we did a partnership with Cox Mercy down in Springfield, mm-hmm. where we will expand the class size, and they'll do their residency at Cox Mercy with the intent of them eventually employing those medical students down there. So this is a huge benefit for the healthcare community in Southwest Missouri, and it benefits the medical school. But the $10 million that we had recurring, oh, by the way, not just our medical school, there's an occupational therapy investment of $1.3 million for Missouri State University down in Springfield. So the combination of that $11.3 million is in a withhold status right now, and we're trying to work through that and get that funding approved.
I'm going to take a call. We have a call coming to us from Bourbon, Missouri. David will join us. David, go ahead. You're on the air with Tim Wolf.
Well, hi there. Thanks. I'm a Mizzou alum. I have a son there getting a second degree right now, and I think when Mizzou was still affiliated with the Big 12, it had the highest in-state tuition of any of the other schools in that that group. So now, of course, the SEC. How does Mizzou's in-state tuition, I'm talking Columbia here, of course, compare to that of the other schools in the SEC? Thank you.
David, thanks for the question. Thanks for being an alumni and your son getting a second degree. I'm happy to say that we just have looked at these statistics because we have a board meeting next week, and the board of curators are responsible for approving tuition increases, and that's on the calendar for Thursday and Friday of next week. And as we looked at the in-state tuition specifically, our in-state tuition is very competitive against SEC schools and also the old Big 12 schools, specifically for MU. What we looked at was the tuition, the average tuition of our campus as compared to the other campuses in the SEC. We found that our in-state tuition is lower than the average. And that the other interesting factoid is over the last 5 years, our average tuition increase has been 2% and change, which is number one on a nationwide basis. The state of Missouri public institutions have the lowest tuition increase of any state in the United States. That is very much influenced by Senate Bill 389 that caps your in-state tuition to the Consumer Price Index. You can go above that if you seek a waiver, which we have not recently. Right now, what we're proposing to the Board of Curators, and that is their ultimate decision, that in-state tuition would go up by CPI, and CPI is right now 0.8%, so it's not even 1%. So as a parent of an in-state student, I think you'd be happy to hear that in-state tuition is just going up marginally.
I know that Dale has a question, but I have to take another break. Dale, just hold on for a moment, if you would. We're talking with Tim Wolfe, who is the president of the University of Missouri System. We'll come back and continue that conversation in just a moment. Stay with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back as we continue our conversation with Tim Wolfe, the president of the Missouri University of Missouri System. Dale Singer, education reporter for St. Louis Public Radio, is with me in studio. Dale, I know you have a follow-up question, but inasmuch as you mentioned the SEC and the Big 12 is brought up at 1.2, we had a tweet here that will take us off in a somewhat different direction for a moment. That is, should Division I men's football and basketball players be paid? Aren't the major universities exploiting these athletes?
Well, the Power Five conference, the NCAA gave certain autonomy to the Power Five conference, which we are part of. SEC is one of the Power Five conference. And there's been a determination that it very much influenced by a federal judge's decision on the Ed O'Banion case relative to compensating student athletes. Mm-hmm. And the verdict was, yes, they can be compensated up to the level of $5,000. And the NCAA recently has looked at this. And we are looking at true cost of attendance for a student athlete is much more than the books and the tuition and the room and board. Student athletes have to spend an inordinate amount of their time in their craft or in their athletic endeavors that prevents them from having a job at the same time because of the hours that they're invested. So the money that they need to fly back home or fly their families to games or go to a movie or a dinner outside the dining hall or whatever is very difficult to come by. And so the true cost of attendance is something that is now NCAA allowable. And we're modeling right now that a student athlete on the MU campus only, and this is just exclusive to the MU campus, not the other three campuses that we have, a student athlete would be eligible for $3,000 annual stipend, you could call it, if they're a full ride. If it's a partial ride of like 20%, then they would have 20% of that $3,000. We're modeling that to be an additional expense of about $1 million. And so those dollars given to that student athlete could be used to fly their mom and dad to a game or for them to fly back home after a Christmas break or something like that. So the answer to the question is yes, there is that ability to compensate a student athlete for their role that they play.
So should they be? I mean,
yes.
What do you think they
yes,
should be?
Yes, I fully support what the NCAA is doing.
$3,000 is a drop in the bucket given the revenues that come in through these sports.
So for certain sports, that's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. So if you take a look at Division I sports programs that have, you know, annual budgets of anywhere from $60 million to $120, $130 million annually. The lion's share of the revenue comes from football, then second is basketball. But there's a lot of other sports that are significantly underwater. Some of this is motivated by Title IX that states that clearly and appropriately so, that you have to have equity in terms of the number of female and male students that you've got. When you take a look at the total athletic department budget, that specifically in MU's case, that's fully burdened by the cost of attendance, so they have to pay full tuition for their student athletes as part of their budget. They're one of the few on a nationwide basis that are self-sustaining, that aren't subsidized by the main campus. And so you have to balance the number of programs that you have and the number of student athletes, recognizing that some it is a drop in the bucket, and other situation it's significantly puts that profit and loss statement for that particular sport further underwater.
One of the words used in that email, excuse me, Dale, just a second, was that feeling that athletes are being exploited. Is that too strong a word to use, or one you might consider using?
Depends upon your definition of exploited. What we call them student athletes for a reason, and it's in sequence for a reason. It's not athlete students. Now, there are some schools, some programs that might get confused. We're not confused at any of our four campuses. The emphasis is on student, and they're also an athlete. Let me kind of give you some statistics as to why this is important. Academic progress ranking, APR is the acronym of MU specifically, has been very, very high. And thanks to the leadership of our athletic director, Mike Alden, and our coaches across the board, we've maintained that strong standing. We were clearly number one in the Big 12. We went to the SEC and we dropped. There's this other school called Vanderbilt that does okay. So we're number two. Vanderbilt's actually an outstanding academic institution, but we're number two. But in certain sports like football, we're number one. In other sports, we're number one. So academic progress ranking has always been very, very important for all of our MU student athletes. And we look at that across all four campuses. What's interesting to note is that the academic performance of an average student athlete across our four campuses is better than a typical student. Hmm. And that's based on graduation rates, retention, all those statistics. So the student athlete experience and the success and the results is, we're very, very proud of. So we believe that this is an interesting, is a worthwhile experience for our student athletes, and I don't believe they're exploited, and I believe that the balance that we've got right now is appropriate, and we'll continue to focus on the academic aspect as well as the athletic aspect.
Let me clarify. So is that $3,000 stipend, is that in practice now?
It's going to be. It's not now. We're not paying any students for the full cost of attendance currently.
When is that going to happen, and how many – does it have to get more approval from the curators, or what's the process?
No, I don't believe it does, and I believe it's more of an NCAA guideline that NCAA and the Power Five are getting together. I'm guess it's going to be later. I don't know if it's going to be in the fall or what the exact timing of that is.
Okay. The other question I wanted to ask you is about – I know you've been on this value tour to – let Missourians know what they're getting from the University of Missouri. And I've asked this question of other presidents over the years. If you tell people in Missouri that they've got a great university, and you also tell them that they're not paying very much compared with other states, are Missourians likely to say, okay, you deserve more, or are Missourians likely to say, great, we've got a bargain, you don't need any more?
Well, we talk about on the Show Me Value Tour what taxpayers and Missourians are getting for their investment right now. We also talk about, for us to fund our future, and so Dave, the caller that we heard from previously, if he as a parent wants to keep tuition low, then we need funding outside of just tuition, and that funding has to come in the form of the state. So if the state decreases funding from a tuition standpoint, then you'll see increases in tuition. So the burden goes from the state to the parents, or to that particular student. Also, when you take a look at what we do from a research standpoint, and we do 90% of the research that occurs in the state of Missouri on public institutions, at public institutions, occur on our four campuses. So it's $300 million of sponsored research that we've got from the federal government as well as industry. Out of that comes new products. Out of that comes new companies. Out of that comes new jobs. So there's a huge economic development lift that we've got. So if somebody concludes that everything is fine and we don't need to invest further, isn't really listening to our message and what our future responsibilities are and what the future expectations of citizens in the state of Missouri are.
We have another tweet here, which I will read to you. What is the ratio between faculty and administrators at the university, and which cost is higher at UM, administration or faculty?
The question is faculty cost more than administrators. We have 5,000 faculty. It depends upon your definition of administration, but the quantity is less than the number of faculty that we've got across our campuses. One of the things that I think is worth noting is over the last 10 years, we've seen a 30% plus increase in student enrollment. Over that same period of time, staff and faculty have increased in total 10%, and the faculty increase line is steeper than the staff increase line. So we are doing a great job in terms of putting our resources where it can affect student performance and affect our priorities in the most effective and efficient way possible.
Yeah. Last time we talked, I started by saying the elephant in the room was the concern over campus security, and you had an incident on campus which was well publicized. I'm wondering, since we last talked, however many months ago that was, what changes have been incorporated by the university to ensure campus safety for co-eds?
Well, the incident got kicked off about 12 months ago. It was January of last year. I challenged the board and I challenged my leadership team to assess where we are right now relative to sexual assault, harassment, mental health. After assessing and inventorying where we are, let's start to look at what's the best practices that are out there or industry-leading initiatives, compare ourselves to that, figure out where we need to invest, and make the necessary changes so that our ultimate goal is having the most safe and secure environment with a culture of respect for both students to all of our employees, inclusive of faculty. That was the challenge back a year ago. Next week at the Board of Curators meeting, I am reporting out to the board that we have each challenge that I stated in January, we've met it and then some. So I'm reporting out the progress that has been made. I believe that in talking with our peers, and I believe with the materials that we've read, we have implemented clarity in terms of if a student unfortunately is assaulted or harassed, or an employee is assaulted or harassed, they know where to go to get help. They know once they have identified as being a victim, we now have the roles in place necessary to investigate the allegations, and we know how to adjudicate them now. And we do this in a consistent way across all the four campuses, and the way that we do it is balanced to the accuser and the victim. The accused and the victim. We also have trained all these people. We've codified it in collected rule, which is our policy manual, so it's clear and descriptive with the intent to have a balanced decision out of this process. We're also tracking the number of these incidents. I'm very, very proud of the progress that we've made. I would conclude it by saying we're not done. This is a never-ending journey. It has to continue to be prioritized, invested in, and we need to continue to track our progress if, in fact, we do want to be, and we do desperately want to be, the most safe and secure campuses, and that's all for.
So after 3 years on the job, how was the job different from what you expected? And this being an academic institution, what kind of grade would you give yourself for the first 3 years?
It's been a lot of fun. It's never a dull moment. The complexity is just really, really hard to describe with 77,000 students and 30,000 employees in all the industries that we touch. It's just a really, really diverse culture. And the good thing is, and what's comforting and puts a smile on my face on a daily basis, is when you see students on the campus and they're walking quickly and they're smiling and looking like they're having fun, you're changing people's lives, which there isn't a better thing that you can do. When you go to the labs or talk to the faculty and you see how bright they are and see the research that they're doing that's solving serious problems, be it cancer or other issues in the marketplace, the research is just profound and eye-opening. That's creating real value and real opportunity, value in people's lives as well as opportunity for new jobs and products. So I think that's great, and it's been eye-opening. I knew we were doing great things. I just didn't know the depth of that. So that would be something that I didn't quite anticipate when I accepted this job. The other thing that, from a challenging standpoint, and I categorize this as a good challenge, is when you make decisions in industry, you've got a team, a small team, 3, 5, 10, whatever it is, that gets together, looks at an opportunity in the marketplace or a problem that you're seeing internally, discuss alternatives, and then you make a decision, and then you go. You just go. You go implement it. And everybody's, in most cases, salute and follow through. Here, not so much. You really need to take a look at what the source of the problem is or what the opportunity is and get a wider, throw a wider net over more constituents to discuss it in a way that you make the best possible decision. And by throwing a wider net and getting the constituencies involved in the conversation, you get more buy-in. So that was a little bit of a different change for me from a leader standpoint. But I can say unequivocally it's produced better results and better decisions, and it's made me a better leader because I now have evaluated more alternatives and voices in the conversation. So that would be the change. The last question is give me a grade. I'd say shucks. How about I passed? If it's a pass fail, it's a pass fail. I passed. There's always opportunities for improvement, and I'm sure I've made a lot of mistakes. But I feel good about the team that I've hired. I feel good about the progress that we've made, but we've got so much more to do. So looking backwards, you can always be critical about the things that you didn't get to or the bad decisions that you made. But all in all, I'd give myself a passing grade versus a failing grade.
We've only got about a minute left, and something I've been curious about relates to all colleges and universities, that being that the number of women attending college is higher than the number of men, the number of women graduating is higher than men. What is going on?
Well, it goes right back to our pipeline. Our pipeline is K-12. When you look at what's going on in our K-12 system, unfortunately, we're seeing disparities in terms of the academically qualified females versus males. And we've got to get after this problem. We've got to get a more balance relative to academic performance in high school, or actually elementary all the way through high school, of males being similar to females, so that we can have more high school graduates and more high school graduates that are academically competent to go on to college. And we got an issue, and we've got to address this.
What does it mean, and again, our time is limited, what does it mean for our society? More women coming out better educated than men.
Oh, my gosh. Well,
you've got 15 or 20 seconds to answer that one.
Well, everybody needs to be educated. We've got to figure out male, female, black, white, whatever. We've got to figure out how everybody aspires to be the most educated, informed citizen that they possibly can.
Right. That's Tim Wolf, who is the president of the University of Missouri System. A very fast hour, Tim. Thanks so much for being with us. And Dale Singer, thank you for being a part of this discussion as well. Good to see you, as always. Good luck as you continue your tour, Tim Wolf. Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape when he'll reveal the nominations for the 2015 St. Louis Theater Circle Awards. He'll also take a look at two local efforts to document and collect artifacts related to the events that occurred in Ferguson in 2014. And he will check in with the arts and culture reporter Willis Ryder Arnold about a new local hip-hop record label. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at how a group of graduate students at Washington University created an organization that helps people start businesses in St. Louis. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is produced by Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, and Erica Smith, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.